Well, people, the Jays did it. They scored double-digit runs in a game they actually won. Believe it or not, they've only scored double-digit runs prior to tonight twice all season, and they actually lost one of those games, which was the Kerry Carpenter walk-off in Detroit, which I choose to forget. The other one was a 10-8 win over the Twins at the Rogers Center, and tonight they make it two wins when they score 10 or more, a 10-6 Jays win over the Giants. And I have to say, I'm impressed, given they were down early. There was an all-star on the mound opposing them, doing basically whatever he wanted early on. There was not one, but two injured starters taking out of this game. There was a real chance this game could have snowballed. But hey, to their credit, they did not allow for that to happen, and they even this series at one game apiece. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Give us a call if you're still awake, 416-870-0590, 1-888-660-590, star 590 on your cell. You can text me as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line is always open. Speaking of those injured players, we'll see what John Schneider says post-game, but obviously we hope for the best when it comes to Dalton Varsho and Bo Bichette. Varsho removed from the game with a left knee contusion after sliding into first base. He kind of got tangled up with all people of Logan Webb. He made the tag himself in the second inning, and then Bo removed from the game in the fourth inning with right calf soreness, which is not what you want to hear. I mean, you never want to hear about injuries for literally anyone, but if you recall, that is the same calf issue that put him on the injured list last month around mid-June. So almost about a month ago, right? About maybe like 3.5 weeks ago. So we'll see what John Schneider says post-game here, but certainly we'll keep you abreast of any updates when it comes to Varsho and Bichette. I actually wanted to start tonight, before we go to the phones, before we go to the text line, I wanted to start by talking about Logan Webb, funnily enough, because it's tough to get anything going against him most days. He is legitimately one of the better pitchers in baseball, certainly in the NL. He's an all-star. He kept the Jays' bats off balance all night long. And certainly that has not been a very hard thing to do for most of the season. But Ernie Clement putting an end to that in the fifth inning. And I got to say, it wasn't a bad pitch from Logan Webb, an 86-mile-an-hour changeup that was a few inches well below the zone. Clement essentially goes golfing to get that. It was a phenomenal swing by Clement. The crazy thing with Webb tonight, which is just a part of this sport we all love, but he retired 13 of the first 14 batters he faced this evening, and his stat line by the end of the night had him giving up 7 runs on 8 hits in 5 innings of work. Like, what a weird sport. You know, that's just a part of it. Also, he looks like Jesse Plemons, like Todd from Breaking Bad. You know, I cannot be the first person to have made that observation. By the way, on that, that home run from Clement, we talked about this a little bit last night, but the homer he hit off Ryan Walker last night was just a second home run off a breaking ball in his entire career. So the third career home run off a breaking ball for Clement coming tonight. He knocks in a fourth run off of Sean Jelly. A great night for Ernie Clement. 3 hits for him, 4 RBI. Showed off the wheels as well. He must have a pretty high sprint speed when comparing to the rest of the team. But Chris Black from Sportsnet had this great note on the changeup that he threw, Webb threw to Clement. So changeups thrown down and out of the zone in Logan Webb's entire career. All right, I'm just going to read you the stat line. Before Ernie Clement tonight, he had thrown 1,177 changeups down and out of the zone. He has gotten from those 1,177 pitches thrown down and out of the zone, changeups, 21 hits. One of those was an extra base hit, no home runs, a batting average of 0.94, a slugging percentage of 0.98, a negative 9-degree average launch angle, and 1 barrel. And then Ernie Clement changed all of that by going golfing for a 3-run jack in the fifth inning. That was incredible stuff. Honestly, I got to say, very, very impressed by Ernie Clement. I wanted to read some texts on the text line. Some of them, these ones make me laugh. Morgan in Antigonish, Nova Scotia. Ernie is on another heater, which means he's probably hit his way into being benched until it completely cools off. Upside down smiley face emoji. I really hope we see Ernie, Spencer, and Davis in the lineup every day from now on. I don't care about performance, analytics, or name value. Those three give me something to cheer for, which is all I can hope for at this point. Alex in the Junction. Staying up late, Alex. He says, or she, I don't want to assume. Alex says, Clement is really setting the table to start on the bench tomorrow with his recent performances. Glad Bassett was able to keep it together. Great to see the Buffalo boys really starting to find their groove along with the big bats minus Bo. I just don't want to see these flickers of false hope affect the way the front office operates over the next stretch. Let the kids play and retool for next year. I think that's fair. I think that's totally fair. I actually feel like if we're talking about, if the conversation about this team is what Morgan and Alex are saying when it comes to play the kids, essentially, I gotta say, I think I've been impressed enough to include Leo Jimenez. And I think he might have forced his way into slightly more regular playing time, maybe even before the Bo Bichette injury, given that, you know, we're talking about playing the Buffalo Boys and the Buffalo Brigade, whatever you want to call them. I think that's what Jesse called them, the Buffalo Brigade. But hey, I mean, if this Bo Bichette injury, the calf injury, again, one that had kept him on the IL pretty recently, if that is serious in any way, shape, or form, I mean, if the conversation about the team is, quote unquote, the future is now, the Jays need to play the young guys, then Jimenez has, in my opinion, he has got to be a part of any conversation that also includes Ernie Clement, David Schneider, and Spencer Horwitz. And we saw a little bit more from certainly Jimenez and Schneider tonight because Varsho and Bo got taken out of this game. So again, we'll await injury updates on that. But yeah, it's I think you are, honestly, I think you were going to see him more anyways. Having said that, I think you're probably going to see more now at short if this injury is any meaningful in terms of length in any way, shape, or form. But I got to say, I've been impressed. 2 for 4 from Jimenez tonight. I've been largely pretty impressed. Let's talk about that sixth inning. The Jays scored 6 runs. The Jays opened that inning by going double, single, 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 force out from Kiermaier, double from Springer, and then 2 outs to end it. But what an inning by the Jays. Actually, if you look at the context of this whole season, which I know it is what it is, maybe the best offensive inning they've had all year. Like, I remember a 7-run inning against the White Sox in Chicago. I think there was a Bo Bichette homer in there somewhere. There was a similar inning in Boston against the Red Sox that had a Vladdy 2-run double, a Springer dinger, I think, in there as well. I think both those were 7-run outings, 6-7 runs thereabouts. And, of course, a few weeks ago, Springer with 2 dingers off Carlos Rodon against the Yankees. But that was actually over 2 innings, right? I think they scored like 8 runs in the first 2 innings, but it was like 5-3 or 4-4, whatever it was. The point being is we have not really seen this more than 2 or 3 times, maybe all year, right? All season. I was really worried that they would not turn out to give Bassett some run support, because we have actually seen that a lot this year. So, hey, well done by them to get to Webb and Sean Jelly in that inning. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones. Betty in Manitoba. Betty, what's up? Betty, you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay. I had a chance to watch the entire game in its entirety, and it certainly didn't disappoint as far as entertainment value, that's for sure. Well, I just wanted to mention a couple of things. The first thing was, and I'll start with Bassett, and then I'm going to circle back to him again. But just when watching Bassett and the veteran he is, and such a cerebral person, it's just quite interesting watching him pitch. And the reason I'm commenting on it is because, as you and everyone else saw, you know, by the second inning there, it felt like, oh no, this is not looking good, right? This is unraveling, and the focus of this game is going to be on what's happening here with Bassett. But before long, you know, what you already mentioned about what all went on with Clement was, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, there was the incident there between he and Bassett, and then there was in the foul territory line, there was there with Schneider, and then he turns around and then he hits a 3-run home run. It was just like every time, every 10 minutes, you just couldn't look away from the TV, because what was Clement going to be involved in next?
Betty, honestly, when he almost took out Bassett's legs, and then he kind of smiled and tapped Bassett and they helped each other up, Bassett looked so pissed. Like, honestly, he looked so annoyed.
Right, and it wasn't before too long that then he went up to the plate and hit that 3-run home run. So it was almost like, my bad, sorry about that, Bassett. Here's a 3-run homer to help you out. It wasn't that, of course. He's professional. Obviously, he he, you know, to his credit, right? And so anyway, that was, I found that quite entertaining. But I'm going to circle right back to Bassett, and then I'll sign off, just because I actually wanted to make a comment about with Bassett and with Pete Walker coming to the mound. You know, time and time again, and I know we've seen this happen again and again, watching Walker go up to the mound, and, you know, sometimes he's even putting his hand on the pitcher's shoulders, just the way he kind of, you know, he just kind of calms it down, slows down the game, and he's just so fantastic with the pitchers. And I just, you know, it doesn't hurt to talk about Pete Walker more and more, right? What he does for these pitchers.
Absolutely, Betty. Thanks for the call. I totally agree. I think actually, if you haven't heard, it's definitely a good time to mention that Blair and Barker actually had Pete Walker on Blair and Barker today, earlier today, or I guess yesterday. It's after 12 Eastern on the East Coast. But generally speaking, he was on today, and I actually... Barker asked him, I think it was the last question he asked him, about Bassett and how when you go up to the mound, or when we collectively, fans of the media, when we all watch Pete Walker make that run, that jog to the mound, that he kind of, like, his demeanor changes based on who's out there, right? Like, if it's someone who requires an interpreter, like Kikuchi or Yariel Rodriguez, there's a different sort of conversation happening because he's relaying things to the interpreter, who's then relaying the message to the pitcher, or vice versa, right, back to Walker. But when it comes to Bassett, for example, he's not actually doing a lot of talking. I thought that was really interesting. Like, he's doing a lot of head nodding, like a lot of listening to what Bassett is saying, because he is such a cerebral guy. He's a guy who's very particular about his use of the pitch com and so on. But I agree. I mean, there is something to be said about Pete Walker's, not just his influence on how he works his magic and sprinkles the pixie dust on a variety of these guys, including guys we saw tonight. Ryan Burr, I actually thought was very, very impressive. I'm not sure he's going to be in the circle of trust anytime soon, but I got to say I was very impressed by him. But his calm demeanor, because you got to think that, again, he has a bit of a different look for every guy. But I am, generally speaking, very impressed by him. Chris Bassett tonight, he was off. Right. I think that's easy to say. I don't think it's a really particularly crazy conversation to have. It was a second straight start. He looked a little off to start. Right. He gives up two runs on a walk and three singles. He was at 63 pitches by the end of the second inning. He just wasn't sharp. Right. I actually thought it was impressive, considering he wasn't that sharp, that he was able to escape that jam in the second, in which he walked three straight batters and still allowed no runs in that second inning. He did get through a few more innings while picking up things a teensy bit. He kept on going with the sinker, the cutter, but still some hard contact on both those pitches. Patrick Bailey gets aboard. Michael Conforto drives him in with a 109-mile-an-hour RBI double, which tied the game at three before the sixth, certainly, from the Blue Jays. But just a sloppy night from Bassett all around, which is too bad, right? Because I almost feel like I jinxed him before his not tonight, before the previous start, I guess, against the Astros. I was on here with Jesse saying, yeah, Bassett should be an all-star. And generally speaking, two outings are not going to just erase a whole season of him playing very well, I would say. But it is tough, right? 99 pitches, 60 of them strikes, five innings, five hits, three runs, all of which were earned, four walks, which you don't see from him too often, and six strikeouts. Speaking of Pete Walker, though, I thought he continues to, I think, do good work with the bullpen. And again, it's a pretty beleaguered bullpen. It's a shorthanded bullpen. I'm not sure any of Brendan Little, Ryan Burr, Bowden Francis are going to be in the circle of trust anytime soon. But Brendan Little, he comes in for the sixth after Bassett doesn't come back out. And we just continually see some tantalizing things from Little. Like just enough that I think maybe he should be in the circle of trust, maybe the outer circle of trust. And then he does what he did tonight, right? Two quick outs, then walk, single, single, walk to load the bases, and then he gets the yank from Schneider. It feels like he's pretty close, and then and maybe he's residing on just on the outside or knocking on the door of the outer circle of trust, but it's just tough to see that because it just feels like he takes kind of like two steps forward, one step back, a teensy bit. But there are still some really interesting things in terms of his profile and some of the pitches he throws, including that knuckle curve, which you don't see a lot of pitchers throw anymore. So I am curious to see how that continues to develop, because it's not like he's been up with the major league club that long. So, you know, if he continues to work with Pete Walker, I have faith that he can become something. But the question for this team, and if Jimmy Garcia does get back to form, and Jimmy Garcia, by the way, we were thinking yesterday he would throw today. He did not throw today, so we'll see if he throws tomorrow. The plan is for him to throw tomorrow after he threw a side session today. The stiff neck still bothering him, but if he does throw tomorrow, maybe we're having a different conversation about the bullpen and the circle of trust during the Diamondbacks series, because there's a chance, according to John Schneider pregame, that does happen. Zach Pop does come in. He gets Matt Chapman with the bases loaded. It was just the one out. Good stuff from Chapman, which is something I feel like we saw too much last year. Chapman doing good work for the Jays and not for the Giants tonight. I guess he did hit that home run off of Bowden Francis to end the game, but I don't know. It was like the lowest leverage spot where he finally came through instead of with the bases loaded. Kind of tough. A lot of us fans, the media saw a lot of from Chapman last year, in particular from May onwards. By the way, before we go back to the text line, I'm not sure Ryan Burr is going to be someone we talk about a lot, but he saved the bullpen on a night that Chris Bassitt did not have his best stuff, right? 9 pitches in the bottom of the 7th, 9 pitches in the bottom of the 8th. One of my favorite quirky rules about baseball is when you let a reliever who keeps the team's lead pitch 3 innings and you get a save. And we actually saw Kikuchi, of all people, if you guys remember, do this, I think, a couple of years ago when he was briefly moved to the bullpen when he was struggling. I think it was the first year in a Jays uniform. I was kind of hoping Burr would get the chance to do it tonight, but Bowden Francis comes in, and I guess he hadn't pitched in a week or almost a week, so I get it, but I don't know. How often do you get relievers able to get 3-inning saves? By the way, not ideal of Bowden Francis to give up back-to-back moonshots, like absolute bombs, to Patrick Bailey and Matt Chapman. I mean, like, I have Bailey on my fantasy team, so I'll take it, but I mean, man, like, it's the lowest possible leverage, up by 6 runs when he enters. It was 10-4, and just towering shots by those two. So I do hope he continues to turn it around. Maybe it was just simply rust. He did get a strikeout, a called strike to end the game. So maybe that's part of it. Maybe it was just a bit of rust. And I think we have seen better from Bowden Francis, but that was a little tough. 590, 590, name and location. That is the people's text line. And you are certainly welcome to text me whenever you like. I see a text here from Jeff in Vancouver, who texted yesterday. Jeff said, totally agree. Let the Buffalo Boys play. Hopefully the return of IKF doesn't impact playing time for them too much. I like IKF, but it's time to give some runway to the kids to see what they can do. Love the show. I mean, they had been calling, I agree, but they had been calling IKF's return, I don't even think they had called him day to day. They had been calling him like week to week, if I recall correctly. So I got to say, I don't think IKF is that close to returning. IKF has played well enough that I think he deserves to also play. So that does make that conversation a little tougher. But I mean, if you believe the season is lost, and I know some don't, but if you believe that, you know, they have I think their postseason odds after, I think coming into tonight, it was like 2% or 1% or whatever it was, right? So maybe it's gone up a teensy bit after tonight, because you're not just talking about jumping. You're not just talking about jumping like the to the wildcard teams. You have to jump all the teams in between you and wildcard 3, which of which there are like 5 or 6, right? So I mean, if you believe the season is lost and you want to see some more run given to the Buffalo Boys, then yeah, I think you got to play them. Matt from Halifax, glad I stayed up for this one. Still trying to figure out how Ernie got to that pitch. Jimenez looks good too. Great to see the young guys stepping up when they needed them to. Ed and Aurelia, you have to credit the Giants outfields for some of those hits in the big inning. If it was the Jays outfields, a lot of those balls hit would have been out. It's true. We did see some fumbling go on in the outfield by a lot of Giants outfielders, essentially. Out there tonight, I think at least to start, it was Elliot Ramos, Michael Conforto, and Mike Yastrzemski. Those were the guys out there in center, left, and right, respectively. Ramos, Conforto, Yastrzemski. I mean, yeah, they bobbled a lot of balls. And there were some, I think on the first Kirk hit or the second Kirk hit, it was I looked like could have been ruled a double, but it was a single with an error. So you're right. I mean, I think it's something we do maybe perhaps take for granted, something they've also subtracted from in order to make anything happen offensively. But again, a 10-6 win tonight does mean they did get it going. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I do want to have some more conversations about Vladdy, about Kirk, talk a little bit more about that big 6th inning of work. And certainly get back to the phone lines, back to the text line as well. You guys are the best. Thanks for being with me here on a late one on Jays Talk. 10-6, the Blue Jays beat the Giants to even this series at 1 game apiece. Show Ali with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
0-2, and Springer just drove one again to the gap. A one bouncer off the wall in left center. Coming around to score is Clement, and Springer does it again as he stands on second. For the second straight time, another double for Springer as he continues to swing a hot stick.
That's Eric Smith with a call of George Springer's double, three RBI for him. Actually, two hits, both doubles for those three runs. He's playing really well. I don't know that we've gotten to the point where Springer is parlayed himself into being someone who will be acquired at the deadline, but boy, I mean, it's certainly a more fun discussion to discuss Springer and his production than it was maybe like 2 weeks ago. So great stuff for Springer. Again, three runs for the right fielder who is back atop the order and hitting well these days. So kudos to Springer. You're listening to Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali with you for another 15 minutes or so. Still some time to get some texts in. 590 590, name and location, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call if you want to drop me a line. I was going to say leave me a message, but you can call live. We'll take you live with those phone numbers here on Jays Talk. Like I said, here for another 15 minutes. Get to the text line very shortly. A quick update for those of you who are interested in the injury news. Dalton Varsho, day-to-day. That's from John Schneider. Bo Bichette getting an MRI right now as well. So John Schneider saying there's a possibility the Blue Jays might get someone out west for tomorrow, or certainly for this continuing road trip. I honestly wonder who they could bring up position player wise. Like, is it time to see Gabriel Cancel, who is a bit of an older guy? Is it time to see Riley Tirota, who I'm pretty sure jacked another home run for the Bisons earlier tonight? So probably one of those guys. I will admit, I won't pretend to be a prospect expert, but you need, like I said, I've said many times, you need Blake Murphy for that. But you might see perhaps a promotion we did not expect at this stage of the season in the not-too-distant future. Maybe they just bring up... Actually, I guess they can. I was going to say maybe they bring up back Addison Barger, but I think when you get sent down, you got to stay down for a certain amount of time. So probably not Barger, but hey, we'll see. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing Riley Tirota. That'd be quite an ascension for him, but he has been hitting the cover off the baseball if you go look at some of his stats in the minors. But anyway, so that's the news on Bo. Bo getting an MRI right now. Dalton Varsho also day-to-day. Calf soreness and contusion, left-leg contusion for Varsho, calf soreness for Bo Bichette. Let's go back to the text line. 590, 590, name and location. Let's see here. Nicole in Ottawa. Hey, show, can you give us an update on the inner and outer circles of trust given the injuries and the struggles we've seen lately? Nicole, I'll say this. It's a very easy conversation. It's Chad Green, and in the inner circle of trust, I am still willing, despite what we got last night, to put Trevor Richards on the fringes of the outer circle of trust, and that's it. Honestly, that's truly it. There is a world in which if he continues to pitch well, this is a completely arbitrary number, but let's say until the end of the Diamondback series, because that's the end of the first half, quote unquote, of the season. But when we come back for the second half, if he pitches well, I'm willing to give it to Yennesis Cabrera. The guy's pitched pretty well, all things considered. We haven't seen him in a couple of days, but love the demeanor on the mound, has some fire to him. Yeah, he tried to shove the glove off the guy's nose earlier in the season it was completely his fault. He deserved to get suspended. But generally speaking, Yennesis Cabrera might be the closest guy to entering the circle of trust. And honestly, if Richards keeps up what he's been doing in a negative fashion, he might be on his way out of the circle of trust. But he's been generally pretty reliable. It's just too bad that in the last like inning and a third, he's given up like five earned runs or whatever it is. So yeah, I do think that's probably it. It's just, there's so many guys on the outside looking in, and I hope Cabrera gets in there. I hope Little manages to get himself in there, but that's probably where we are. I see a text here from Joe Orico. Joe, nice to hear from you, man. Joe's been on the pregame show with me before. Joe says, was catching the show tonight. Wanted to point out the serious command issues we've seen from Bassett this season. Multiple walks in 15 of 19 games this year, his walk percentage is higher than it's been since 2018, which is obviously not ideal. Obviously, I do think Bassett kind of gets away with it because he uses so many different pitches and he almost really screws with the heads of so many batters, especially young ones. But yeah, I agree. It's not ideal for Bassett. I do think he has a chance to turn it around. And he likely will be a Blue Jay next year. I have a real hard time believing he's going to get traded, even though I think he would be a decent trade asset. I have a hard time thinking he's going to get traded, given an update to Ricky Tiedemann, which we'll get to in 2 seconds here. But I think it's a good point by Joe. Also, Joe Orico, O-R-R-I-C-O 99, is where you can follow Joe online and on Twitter. And he's a great follow. I highly recommend it. Mentioned the update to Ricky Tiedemann. I was really looking forward to this. Ricky was supposed to pitch for the Bisons today, and he did. Pat Malacara with WGR 550, who's the voice of the Bisons, had said earlier today that Tiedemann had been scheduled for 70 to 75 pitches, maybe closer to 80 with the Bisons tonight. I was really waiting on that. If you haven't seen this, he only threw one inning. He allowed one hit, one run, which was earned. He struck out one batter. He walked three. He threw 27 pitches, 12 of which were strikes. He did not come out for the bottom of the second inning. And I thought, okay, maybe it was a pitch limit for that particular inning. Maybe he just got worked too much and they decided to not be super reckless with him, be really cautious with one of their higher ranked prospects. But Shai Davidi, Sportsnet, saying he left his outing tonight with left forearm tightness after that one inning, which is it's not great. You hope for the best, but it's been a tough year for a lot of the Blue Jays pitching prospects, right? Adam Macko also experiencing some left forearm or forearm tightness. Obviously, this is something that Manoah dealt with, and now he's done for the year. I believe Brandon Barriera, a recent Blue Jays first rounder, also having that issue. So not a great time to be a Blue Jays pitching prospect. For Tiedemann, he had just come off the IL after being shut down, if you remember, with the ulnar nerve inflammation earlier in the year. And last year, he had shoulder bicep soreness and was limited to 62 innings pitched. This year, already with the several injuries and 17 and a third innings pitched. So not a good place. I don't think we'll be seeing Ricky Tiedemann all that soon. Let's go back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Adam in Thornhill calling in again. Adam, what's up?
Hey, how are you, show?
Yo, man.
I really don't mean to be negative. I really don't. But I'm going to be. Mark Feinstein wrote an article earlier today about how the front office is considering moving the pending UFAs at the trade deadline, but will not trade any of the players that are committed to contracts beyond 2024. So I don't really understand why you wouldn't listen on offers on Bassett, Gausman, and Green. So what makes no sense to me is two things. First of all, they're pitching well. Gausman's coming off being a Cy Young finalist last year. Obviously, we know across baseball pitching injuries, it's an epidemic. There's not a lot of sellers. And the other side of it is they always say, well, if it's a pending UFA, you're really not going to get much in return because it's an expiring contract. Well, when you want to trade a player that has maybe 1 year left like Bassett or Green or 2 years left like Gausman, they say, well, it's a big commitment for the other team to take on. Well, it doesn't make any sense. Either they're willing to take on the player with just a – I understand if it's 4, 5, 6 years left on the deal. But 1 or 2 years is not that big of a deal. Bassett's not – that expensive next year. It's $20 million. I mean, that's or $21 million. That's not insane for a competitive team with money coming off the books to want to take on, even if you have to eat the money for the rest of this year to get a better prospect. But my point is that Bassett's 35, he'll be 36. He's not going to get better. He's only going to get worse. He's playing really well now. So why wouldn't your assets are at the highest value because of it's a seller's market. So by the time we're ready to win again, they're not going to be here. So why not recoup as much as you can for them? Thanks.
Hey, Adam. Appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for the call, man. Always appreciate you calling in. I suspect they would listen if there was like the Godfather offer. Honestly, I know what Feinstein said. It was an interesting article. I think he's actually going to be on with one of Blair or Blake in the next couple of days. I recall hearing that from the producers. But either and so I'm sure we'll hear more from that in the next couple of days on this radio station. But my point being that I bet the way it was phrased from Feinstein seemed to imply to me that it seemed to imply kind of what Adam is saying, that there's no way, there's no chance they're going to listen on anyone. I don't think that's true. It's just given that I've said this a million times, given that they just need someone. People, they need bodies to pitch for them. And I just thought laid out the injury to Tiedemann and basically all of the other high-ish ranked Blue Jays pitching prospects. I mean, they need like people to actually throw balls in them every 5 days, essentially. So I honestly think that's why, because I got to think that it's we're not talking about guys making like $40 million, right? Like we're not talking about some of the contracts that were handed out to like Scherzer and Glasnow and Kershaw and Verlander and some of these guys. And those guys are making like ungodly amounts of money, but they're pretty like reasonable contracts too. The other part of it is, I mean, if they truly believe, and I all things point to them actually believing this, but if all things point to them believing that they're not actually far away from competing, then there would be no impetus to trade Gausman or Bassett or Berríos, right? Like, if you think that they're only a quick retool with a pretty strong free agent class and assets coming in for all the pending UFAs, then they probably wouldn't have any real reason to trade those guys unless they did get some kind of major offer from whoever, right? And again, I think if someone does come to you and say, we're giving you one of our best prospects and we want Bassett back, we want Gausman back, there's no way you can really ignore that because of the state of the farm system. But I don't think they're going out looking for those deals. That's kind of how I interpreted Fine Sand's comments, unless I'm completely off base here. I did want to talk a little bit about that sixth inning again, just before we go. We get a couple quick hitters for you. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., I thought it was really funny to start that inning, showed bunt in the top of the sixth inning, and then immediately powered a ball, like I think in the next three swings, to right center. Maybe a few more feet, and it would have been a solo home run. And I think this stat, that it was a home run in 15 ballparks, shows you two things. Both how, one, cavernous Oracle Park is. I've never been there, but it looks absolutely gigantic, right? It really, like, kind of undersells how big this place is. And two, how Vladdy needs to never bunt ever, right? I mean, this guy, all he does is hit home runs, or hit for power at least. And we're seeing that more and more these days. So maybe I shouldn't say all he does, because he didn't do that for a good chunk of the year. So don't want to misspeak there. But he has been doing it more. And if this was basically half of the ballparks in Major League Baseball, would have been a home run. So I will take it. Leo Jimenez, I mentioned earlier, great production from him. I love the, he took a middle sweeper from Webb. He catches it for a sharp line drive, sends it for a double. I'm very impressed by it because he's so young, has not had a lot of major league experience. I know he's been a prospect for a long time, but generally speaking, very impressed. Alejandro Kirk. So coming into tonight, all right, we haven't talked a lot about Kirk because he's not had the greatest of seasons. Obviously he has a batting average coming into tonight. Okay. I haven't seen to see what it's been updated to after tonight's game, but a BA of 216, a slugging percentage of 311. Obviously not great. It has not been a great time for Kirk's offense, but look, including tonight, all right, in his last nine games, this includes tonight's 10-6 win, 12 hits, four of which were doubles, seven RBI, and two walks. Now, nine games are a very small sample size. I totally get it. We're not ready to say he's back by any means, but that is a pretty positive outlook, all things considered. Now, are those 2022 starting catcher in the All-Star game numbers? No, but I will take it. And given what we regularly see from Kirk when it comes to pitch framing, when it comes to blocking the plate, game calling, all of the things he has continually gotten a lot better at, if the offense can even be like halfway decent, somewhat manageable, that's a great development for this team, considering that Kirk is just 25. He'll be 26 at the end, beginning of November. You need a catcher on this team who can do something, right? I'm not saying we're ready to put Kirk back in the cleanup spot, that he's going to necessarily even be part of the core, much like we had the conversation just now about Gausman and Bassett. Someone gives you the Godfather offer for Kirk, you probably have to at least consider it, right? But considering that there's a real possibility that Danny Jansen is either traded or leaves in free agency, that's a good place to be. And again, I want to restate, nine games is not something you need to say we're ready to turn the season around on for, but I do think it's important. 590, 590, name and location. There was a text here from Kyle in Woodstock. Kyle actually says, thanks for staying up late for us all. You're up pretty late too, Kyle. So thanks for texting in and staying up late to shoot me a text. Kyle says, hey, show, wins like this are nice and needed. As a realistic fan, I'm focused on what the team can do this year to help them improve for next season. That said, compared to other available arms that will be in the market come the deadline, where do the Jays asset rank? Kikuchi would have to be one of the top available arms on the market, would he not? I think it's a valid question. So, you know, Jeff Passan was on with Blair earlier today, and Barker asked him the question about teams in the AL East and who would be active. And he talked about one of the names Passan threw out there. And I have seen, I think it was Jim Bowden, who had an article in The Athletic, who he polled a variety of executives. And he asked him about other names that would be available. So Passan basically said Jack Flaherty from the Tigers would be potentially available. I think he mentioned Flaherty because he got traded to the Orioles last year at the deadline. But Flaherty was a name. We know the White Sox are actively shopping Garrett Crochet, and he would easily be like the sexiest name on the market, I think, from any pitching standpoint. I'm sure the Dodgers are really trying hard to get themselves a piece of Garrett Crochet. But apart from Garrett Crochet and Jack Flaherty, the Rays are, I think they were 45 and 47 after they lost to the Yankees today, but they're still hovering around that third wild card. So would they trade Zach Eflin? I would say no. Passing Kibosh, the potential that Tarek Skubal would be available. So, you know, if that's the case, then honestly, after Garrett Crochet, you say he's got to be the best, like, UFA, quote-unquote, available arm on the entire market, I would say. Jimmy Garcia has got to be pretty close, but, I mean, you know, he hadn't been pitching well prior to the injury, and now he's been injured for a chunk of time, too, right? So I think there's got to be some time for you to build back up his value a little bit. But Kikuchi, I'm going to say Kikuchi is, in my opinion, the second-best starting pitcher available on the market after Garrett Crochet, who's been phenomenal. And, of course, the difference is Crochet is under contract for a little bit longer. I think he's a little younger. So it's a little different with Crochet, right? But because pitchers like him don't become available that often, and the White Sox being the White Sox, they don't actually need to trade him. They have a pretty decent farm system, all things considered. Obviously, they're not a very good major league team. But, yeah, I think that's where we are. I think it's probably number two. Before we go, we got a couple minutes left here. I wanted to play a clip for you before we go. Because we operate in the hot stove environment here on Sports Talk Radio, really anything these days can be blown out of proportion. I saw this making the rounds during the game tonight. So this was a pretty innocuous interview. Bo Bichette did this series with Carlos Ramirez, who works for NBC Sports Bay Area. So the rights holders for Giants games out west. I thought what he had to say was somewhat interesting. This was actually a clip was circulating on Twitter about 20 minutes before first pitch tonight.
And another one of the narratives out there, Bo, I don't know if you know this, some players, agents, some people think, you know, San Francisco, the way the city is right now, they might deter players from coming to play here. What have you seen so far, and what do you like about the city of San Francisco?
Yeah, honestly, I haven't really explored the city much. Right. For me, first and foremost, I mean, I want to win. That would be the number one priority for me if I was choosing a team. And, you know, the Giants obviously are committed to that. So, you know, I think that they're in a position to get the right type of players, and I think that's what's important.
So I want to win. That would be the number one priority for me if I was choosing a team. I personally, maybe I'm going contrary here versus what we had seen from a lot of other people on Twitter or X. I don't necessarily think that is some sort of indictment personally for Bo of the team, or like that he's dunking on the Jays or something that he wants out. But I did find it interesting that like he was essentially asked like a puff question. About like, what do you think of this? What do you think of San Francisco? Like, what do you think of the city? Did you go see the Golden Gate Bridge? Like, did you go visit Alcatraz? Right? Like that. I feel like that was the kind of question he was being asked. And the first thing he brings up is like winning, which the Jays are not doing a ton of right now. Like, I've never been someone who thinks that Bo has quit on the team or really that players really quit generally speaking. And I don't think we actually see that often, but because if he were to be quitting because he like hates being on the team or something, he would be costing himself millions and millions and millions of dollars, right? I mean, he's a shortstop. He's going to get paid either way. But I mean, there's probably a difference between him having this season and him having last year's season being the difference between being paid like tens of millions of dollars, I would think. So I choose to believe he's not quitting. At the same time, it also doesn't sound like a guy who had long-term plans to stay in Toronto would say, right? Like he could have easily just said, yeah, San Fran, beautiful city. Can't wait to see eat some pizza and see the Golden Gate Bridge. Like he could have said like really anything and just left it at that. And I think the reason it stands out to me is because like generally speaking, Bo's pretty taciturn, right? Like he doesn't go out of his way to elaborate really on anything ever on any subject, whether it's like a puff piece or whether it's on actual baseball. Like, hey, Bo, how'd you play? Yeah, I played really great tonight. Like that's just how he is, right? I don't think there's really a problem with it, but I just thought that was an interesting piece of news. Question mark when I say news that was circulating, making the rounds on the old Twitter machine, the old X machine. Tomorrow, though, we will get a fun matchup for a number of reasons. Kevin Gausman, the one-time Giant, he will take on Jordan Hicks, the one-time Blue Jay. Hicks, someone who made the jump back to being a starter this season, signed with the Giants to do that. I highly recommend reading Jeff Passan's piece on pitchers like Hicks, like all-star Reynaldo Lopez for the Braves, how these guys have toyed with velocity, and in Hicks' case, actually turned down the velo to make himself more effective, which I find really interesting. So that's on tap for us tomorrow. Appreciate you guys being with me tonight. Always appreciate the calls. Appreciate the texts. Appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Killaloe and Pembroke. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Eric Smith, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Armin Zargarian, I'm Sho. That does it for us. I am out of here. Blair and Barker have their lone edition of Jays Talk later this afternoon. That'll do it for them before the All-Star break. I'm doing all three of the Diamondbacks games, so sleep fast. It's an early one tomorrow, relatively. I'll talk to you later.